We are doing in Yaakov, and we're holding approximately Daf Yud Tet Amud Bet in the letter Ayin Aleph on page 100 in the standard in Yaakov editions. It's the beginning of a new semester, a new Zman, so we'll review a little bit what is the in Yaakov. The in Yaakov is a sefer that was written approximately 500 years ago. And the idea of the work is to take the Agadot, the Midrashim, the stories from the Talmud, the parts of the Talmud that deal with concepts, philosophical concepts, that deal with traits, that deal with stories, and to basically, just like we have the Rif, that he distills the Talmud to all the halachas. So the Ein Yaakov distills the Talmud of the halachos and gives us the stories, the Agadot of the Talmud. And the Ein Yaakov, there was a period when the printing of the Talmud was banned and people were prohibited by the church from owning the Talmud. The Talmud was burnt throughout Europe. And then after a few decades, the church permitted the Ein Yaakov to be printed. All the while, the Talmud was still prohibited. We have a long recording of that online. If you want, you go to torahforme.org. I wrote a quick summary of the history of the Ein Yaakov and the Talmud burning. And you can see over there, in two pages, you'll see a quick summary of exactly how the Ein Yaakov became a standard household item because people could no longer have the Talmud. The church forbade the printing or the ownership of the Talmud. And so the Talmud became extinct throughout much of Europe for quite a few decades. And then, after much pleading and begging, the church permitted the printing of the Ein Yaakov, again after much censorship. And so the Ein Yaakov was the only version of the Talmud that people could own. And since then, since the 1500s, the Ein Yaakov has been a standard item in Jewish homes. In many shuls, they learn Ein Yaakov, because this is something that even a person who isn't too learned can appreciate. Now, the beauty of the Ein Yaakov that we have nowadays is that there are a lot of commentaries that were added to the Ein Yaakov, where if you'd open a Gemara ordinarily and read the stories in the Gemara, one would have a hard time understanding what depth and what do the stories really mean. And today, for not too much money, you could even get it for free online. You could see the Ein Yaakov and learn the Midrashim and see the different commentaries. So we're going to pick up where we left off before the break. And we're about to enter a very, very interesting sugiya. A sugiya about tzniut, about God's answering our prayers. And we'll begin... For lack of time, I don't think we'll be able to finish the sugya today. We'll finish it, Bezat Hashem, next week. We ordinarily meet here on Sundays at 6:45. This week there was a special event, so we had to delay our learning, but ordinarily at 6:45 we begin. You see where it says Daf Chaf, in parentheses, the second white line, that's where we're up to. Amar le Rav Papa le Abaye. So Rav Papa said to Abaye, if we look at the chronology of the Talmud. So the latter generations of the Talmud begin with Abaye and Rava. Abaye and Rava, from their generation onward, we have special rules of how we rule in Halacha. And Abaye and Rava were contemporaries. They were both Kohanim. Abaye was orphaned at birth. His father passed away when his mother conceived. His mother passed away at childbirth. And Abaye was raised by a stepmother, who he often quotes. He says, Amraliem, my mother told me. Abaye's real name was Nachmani, but he was adopted by Rabba Bar Nachmani, who did not want to call this adopted child by his own father's name. So he called him Abaye, which literally means my father, meaning being that he had the same name as his father. So Rabba Bar Nachmani gave him the nickname Abaye, and it stuck. And Abaye treats his adoptive father and mother like parents. We find him quoting his adoptive mother often as Amraliem, my mother taught me, and he quotes all kinds of good advice from his mother, which is even quoted in Halacha. She gave him some medical advice, which is quoted in the laws of Mila. So now Rav Papa, who's the next generation, Rav Papa was really a disciple of Rava's. Abaye and Rava were contemporaries. Abaye risked his life. There was a Talmudic dispute. When does one have a chazakah for posing a danger? The Talmud says that if we do an action, we do circumcision to a woman's child and he dies, and we don't know why he died, so we don't say it must be the circumcision, we cannot circumcise the other children. We circumcise the next child as well. The Talmud says the same thing is if a man marries a woman and shortly afterwards he drops dead, we don't assume the woman did anything to him. The Talmud says, what happens if she marries husband after husband after husband, and for some reason all the husbands she marries, they all drop dead? So do we assume there's some kind of disease she has that's causing all of her husbands to die? So the Talmud says, yes, there does come a point where we assume there's something going on here. And the Talmud questions, is it after two or three husbands drop dead after marrying her? So one opinion says two, one opinion says three. Abaye heard a quote from Rav Yitzchak in the name of Rav Yochanan that it must be three. And then he met the girl of his dreams, but she happened to be a widow whose husbands all dropped dead just after marrying her. But two husbands dropped dead. So Abaye said, well, my Rebbe, I heard the quote that it takes three, so I can marry her. Well, Abaye married her and died. And it seems she was a very, very good-looking lady. Because when she came to town, Rava was interested in her. And Rava's wife got very upset and she chased her out of town. So that's a story which we'll get to, Bezrat Hashem. Remember, in those days, polygamy was still permitted. So Rava's wife chased her out of town. Rava had a great affection for his wife. Rava had married the daughter of the pious Rav Chista. Rav Chista was also a Kohen. So Abaye and Rava are Kohanim, and now Rava's disciple, Rav Papa, questions Abaye, and he asks him an interesting question. He says, "Maishna rishonim demitrachish lu nisa? How come the earlier generations had miracles? Umaishna anan de lo mitrachish la nisa? And how come we do not have miracles? Imishum tenuye, if it's because of the amount of Mishnayos that we learn, Rav Yehuda, he's one of the earlier generations, and he'd spend all his time learning Nezikin. We know the Talmud is, the Mishnah is divided into six orders. The order that we're referring to now is the order of Nezikin, damages. So he says, Rav Yehuda, I know, he'd focus his time studying Nezikin, the order of damages. And we, Rav Papa tells Abaye, look at us. We review all six orders. We cover all of Shas. He didn't cover Shas so frequently. He'd focus his efforts on Nezikin. And when Rav Yehuda would reach the end of the Shas, which discusses laws of purity, the last Masechta, the last tractate is called Uktzin. That tractate describes when you have a fruit, so the fruit has a stem, right? You pick an apple off a tree. So the apple has a little bit of the branch sticking out of the apple. So we say the apple can become defiled, it can become tameh. What about the little stem that hangs off of it? When do we say that's a part of the apple and when not? So you have a small little tractate called Uktzin that discusses that, the technical details of when is that part of the fruit considered a food item, part of the fruit, or a handle for the fruit or not. So he'd reach the Mishnah that says, Aisha shekoveshet yarak bekedira. If a woman pickles a vegetable in a pot. The Amrila and some say that it was the Mishnah that says, Zeitim shekavshan b'tir fehin, if one pickles olives together with their leaves, with their branches, torim, then they're pure because you're never going to use those branches or leaves. It just makes it look nice, but you're never going to use them even as handles. So they're not considered an extension of the fruit. Amal, when he'd reach this Mishnah, he'd say, Ha'avayot Rav Shmuel kachazina hacha. I see the most difficult discussions like Rav and Shmuel had. When I reach this Mishnah, I can't figure out what it's talking about. So he says, you know, we know all our Mishnahs. Rav Yehuda, he had certain Mishnahs he didn't know well. He got stuck when he reached those Mishnahs. V'anan and we, kamatninan be'uktzin tleita metivta. We review in uktzin 13 different versions and we know them cold. V'ilu Rav Yehuda, and even though Rav Yehuda, it seems, didn't learn, he didn't encompass the way we encompass, kishalif chad mesana, he'd just take off a shoe in prayer, Ve'ata mitra, and the rain would come pouring down. So Rav Papa turns to Abaye and he says, I don't understand. What's the difference between us and the earlier generations? If you'll tell me it's the learning, well, look, we mastered 13 different versions of the whole Shas Mishnayos, and the earlier generations, they didn't know Mishnayos as well as we do. So that can't be it. So how come the earlier generations, God listened to them? They'd have miracles. They'd just take off a shoe, and the rain would come pouring down. Taking off a shoe is a sign of mourning. It's gotten so bad that we're already mourning. We're making public days of mourning and atonement, asking God to bring rain. So Rav Yehuda would take off one shoe, and it would come pouring down. V'anan, and we, says Rav Papa, kametzarinan nafshin umitzvach katzavchinan. We take it so tough. We're wailing. V'let demashkach ban. And it seems like no one's listening. We could stand in prayer, and we wail, and we call days of prayer together. Everyone gets together, all these rabbis. It doesn't seem to affect anything in heaven. We don't get the rain we're asking for. So that's Rav Papa's question to Abaye. What changed? And Rav Papa, he sets up the question. He says, and don't tell me it's the learning, because I know we're learning better than they were learning, or at least we're encompassing more. Amalei, so Abaye said to him, Kamai, the earlier generations, Havu kamasli nafshayu, they would give up their lives, akdushat Hashem, over the sanctity of God's name. They were very concerned over the sanctity, the holiness of God's name. They do everything for the sanctity of God's name. Anan, but us, lo maslina nafshan akdushat Hashem. We don't give ourselves over for the sanctity of God's name. We learn the text. We know the text well. But at the end of the day, when push comes to shove, do we really give ourselves over for the sanctity of God's name? And he's going to give an example. And this is a difficult example. The question is, how does this example illustrate what he's saying? Kihad Rav Ida bar Ahava. Just like the story of Rav Ida bar Ahava. Chaze lahi kutit de'ahavat levishat kabalta. He saw a woman. He didn't know that she was a Gentile woman. He thought she was a Jewish woman. And she wore some kind of overcoat, meaning she wore some kind of garment over her clothing. She wore some kind of red garment that drew attention. Wherever she walked, all heads were turning because she wore this blazing red garment over all her garments to attract attention. And she was walking the shuka in the marketplace. Saval de bat Yisraeli, he thought she was a Jewish girl. Kam karamina, so he walked up and grabbed off that red kerchief or whatever it was that was getting all the guys to look wherever she went. It's like she's going with a blaring sign, look at me. So he got up and he grabbed it, he took it off her. Iglai milta dekutiti. So she got upset. And when the thing settled down, turned out she wasn't even Jewish. She took him to court. Shaimu abalba mezuze. And the courts made him pay 400 coins. He had a huge tax he had to pay, because he shamed her publicly. He took off that garment, whatever it was, and it wasn't that he left her immodestly, quite the contrary. By taking off that blazing garment, she was more modest, but she had no right to do that. To walk up to a woman in a public square and take off her kerchief or whatever it was, whatever this karbalta was, we don't know exactly what this garment was, but it was bright, bright red to draw attention. And the fact that a man walks over and takes something off of a woman, that's shameful. And they made him pay the 400 coins. Amar l'mashnich, so he said to the woman in court, he said, okay, I got to pay these 400 coins. Tell me, what's your name? Amra lei, she said to him, Matun. My name is Matun. What does Matun mean? I don't know. But Matun could mean two things in Aramaic. Matun could mean like Matayim, 200. Or matun could mean like hevu metunim badin. Be patient, take it easy. Amar la, he said to her, matun matun alba me'azuzei shavia. You matun, patience would have been worth 400 coins. If I only would have waited to verify who you are, I would have gotten the 400 coins. So this is the example that Abaye gives Rav Papa, that they gave up their lives for the sanctity of God's name. Meaning, Rav Ida bar Ahava couldn't stand the thought that a Jewish girl was walking around in a way that was attracting attention, and if he could, even though he ended up paying a hefty price for it, if he could get up and do something, he did it. Now, let's think nowadays. If we'd hear of someone doing this, we'd say he's a fanatic. We'd say, what's wrong with him? The truth is that when it comes to acts like this, a lot of it depends on where it's coming from. Meaning, before a person can act, he has to question himself, what's driving me to act? And we have a rule, there are halachos, where we say, in order for a person to fulfill the halacha, he has to be of pure intent. And we're going to see bigger examples of that next week. We're about out of time for this week. But in next week, we're going to learn about men who position themselves in places that on the surface would seem immodest, and they were there to really help the Jewish people, but only people of their stature could put themselves in such a situation. The Talmud tells us there was a rabbi who used to give the kala a ride on his shoulders. So the students asked, do we do that too? So he said, if when you carry her on your shoulder, there's no difference to you whether it was her or a plank of wood, you could do it. That was the level he was on. Obviously, the students were not on that level. To us, that level seems way beyond us. We're going to see next week that there was a rabbi whose students asked him, how come you can be around where girls are present? And he said, I can't tell the difference between whether they're white doves or girls. To me, they're no different. And we're going to explore that on a deeper level next week. But by the mikveh, right, that's next week's Gemara. That's what we're supposed to see this week, but we don't have time. Why was he at the mikveh? But we're going to see a lot more about that. So that's a level that's way beyond us. We don't understand it. But they were on that level. There are many stories about that. Part of the answer we're going to see next week is that the one who was by the mikveh was a eunuch. He was castrated, so he really had no desire. That was a rabbi who was a eunuch. So that was part of his solution. But we're going to see, and the other rabbi, Rav Yochanan, was half blind, so he really didn't see what was going on. We'll see. Each case we'll explore as we get there. But at the end of the day, a person has to be on that level, and a person, for us, that level is beyond our comprehension. It's not only beyond where we are, it's beyond what we understand. So obviously, this isn't teaching us halacha lemaisa, but it is illustrating the point that Abaye was telling Rav Papa. He told him, when a person has that burning connection to his Creator, the sanctity of God's name, then he could do these actions and it stems from the right place. We're adding as a footnote, unfortunately for us nowadays, that's like way beyond us. If a person got up and did something like that today, then he'd be in trouble. But you see that even Abaye was telling this to Rav Papa as an example of something that's beyond them. Even beyond Abaye and Rav Papa, he's telling him an example of something that the earlier generations were holy enough they could do something like that, and we aren't. And that's a rabbi in the Talmud. So how much more so for us nowadays? But this is an example, again, of something that stems from something very pure, which was beyond them, and even more so beyond us. Biz Hashem, we'll pick up here next week with Rav Gidl.